from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
Ah, yes. They are dancing down in West Virginia.
What a song.
You know what they say, it takes 2 to waltz.
Is that what?
They do say that. I have heard that.
The Greenbrier Waltz.
You can't do 3 or 4?
2.
Well, that's...
Like, what do you think the Chagrin Falls
that's waltz? The Chagrin Shuffle. That's not the Greenbrier Waltz.
Danny, welcome to the show. Danny Cunningham in for Ken Carman today. Kenny will return on Monday. I heard Kenny is just champing at the bit.
Is he with an A?
Yes.
Not chomping.
He champing. Is champing to get back here.
Can you explain the difference?
And it dates back to the early Roman days. We'll go over that another time, maybe during the podcast next week. But we did get the news. We have a play caller, and it is Kevin Stefanski. He is maintaining the reins over that offense, of which, now this is where it gets interesting, because we are getting X Reaction social media brought to you by Scheibman Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Kevin Schumann says, complete dysfunction of the organization continues. No team at any level has an OC install an offense and somebody else call the plays. People need to remember this is all due to Kevin Stefanski letting his ego and pride get in the way. Your thoughts, Danny?
He's the best option to call plays. I don't think it's close. I think he's been a fantastic play caller since he's been in Cleveland. I do not understand the thinking that that's not true. I don't get it. When we had Elton from East Cleveland on, I don't understand that thing. That comes across to me as if fans just want to be mad about something, and that's what they can be mad about. Well, I would love to know, for the people that don't want him to be play caller, what do you want him to do? You say you want him to be the head coach of the football team. What does that entail other than he's doing the thing he's best at?
But that's where the narrative has changed over the now going into his 5th season as the Browns head coach, right? Forever it was he's stuck behind the Waffle House menu while Joe Woods is letting the defense get ran all over. And, you know, miscommunications in the secondary, and why doesn't the head coach step up and take control over that? And then they fixed that last year by bringing in Jim Schwartz, and save for, you know, 1 or 2 games, and one of those being the playoff game, the defense was outstanding, right? So it seems like people are still just taking that argument from 3 years ago or 2 years ago that the head coach needs to be more involved in things that aren't the offense, and using that now as why he should not be calling plays when, you know, last year they did a pretty good job calling plays on offense and on defense, minus 1 or 2, you know, hiccups.
And I think Stefanski was the more consistent of the play callers last year, because you look at that defense under Jim Schwartz was awesome and had some pretty incredible highs, right? Like, we think about that game against the Cardinals where they just looked historically dominant. They had some awesome moments, but they also had some pretty low valleys. They also had some pretty bad moments.
Clayton helped with that one.
Leave Clayton out of this. Come on.
Particularly away from Cleveland Brown Stadium. Like, on the road, that defense was nowhere near what it was at home. Kevin Stefanski's offense, I thought, was the much more consistent unit last year. I don't understand.
Which is staggering to think about, considering
how much change they had, especially at the quarterback position. They didn't have Nick Chubb for the vast majority of the season. So that, to me, was much more impressive.
Yeah, that is abnormal. And I get it. If you went into last season saying, I'm so done with Stefanski, I want this offense to be rejuvenated, we're not getting the most out of Deshaun Watson, I understand that you probably came into last year a little biased. And so you remember things like the caller did with the San Francisco game, which is when I went down. I had a meltdown last year on the Monday following that game that our first caller of the day was like, Stefanski's got to go. And I'm like, you don't understand. Like, they're writing columns. Like, Peter King wrote an entire column. Albert Breer wrote an entire column on Monday on how the Browns' win was the most impressive of anything maybe any team has done all year.
At that point, San Francisco had not lost a game. They were playing. They were the best team in football when they came to Cleveland Browns Stadium. And, yeah, Jake Moody missed a very makeable field goal that would have won that game at the buzzer.
My jaw was on the ground at the end of that game. Yeah. We just beat them?
Yes, I could not believe it. I went to that game. And my thinking was the Browns are going to get wrecked because they're playing P.J. Walker against the best team in football.
Wrecked.
That's what I thought. It was going to rain. I'm like, you know what? I'll probably just leave at halftime. I'll walk home. It'll be fine. They won that game. Could not believe it. Still can't.
Honestly, that is the game where I think Stefanski, and with me, I'm stubborn. It takes some time. I think that's the game where I really started to change my view on Kevin, and then just to see everything they battled through. And I mean, what he did in 2020 in the COVID year was pretty damn impressive too, understanding how the Browns, I think, were just smarter than other teams and how they dealt with preparation. But last year, that really was significant in my estimation, and I'm not the only one, and you're not the only one.
No.
And when Ken is back here on Monday, he's not the only one. Listen to Albert Breer talk about the strength of Kevin Stefanski and the way he calls plays.
Yeah, I think Kevin's a really good play caller. You know, and I think the job they did last year was proof of it. But being able to win with different quarterbacks and morph the offense to what their quarterback was bringing to the table at that time. You know, obviously they built a strong running game there and everything else. Yeah, I'd say like Kevin Stefanski's near the top of the league when it comes to offensive play callers.
That was Albert Breer yesterday on Afternoon Drive. You can hear him weekly on Thursdays at, I believe, 5:20. But he was terrific breaking it down. But yet, we have people dissenting. Here is Rob in Medina. Welcome to the show. How are you, Rob?
What's happening, guys?
What's going on?
So I don't think he's a bad play caller. I just don't think that that's his job. You know, when the offense is off the field, I want the play caller with the offense. Like, hey, what's going on? You know, what could we do different? Where he's got to be watching the defense. The head coach is ahead of everything. And when you're the play caller, you know, you got to keep your stuff together for the play calls. You know, you got to be thinking, what am I doing next series? What am I doing? You know, he could always have his headphones on and trump Dorsey's call, you know, or give him, hey, what if we do this? But I just think his head needs to be in the whole game instead of just the
offense. Rob, let me just ask you, are you consistent with this throughout football, or do you think certain coaches have to earn it? Like, you wouldn't say that about Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan, right?
No, I mean, some people can do it, and it all depends on their supporting cast, too. You know, there's been times where Stefanski's had to, you know, interject with the defense. You know, I just think the head coach shouldn't. I mean, are there exceptions that do it well? Yes. And again, I don't think Stefanski's a bad play caller. I just don't think, you know, it's his job. You know, get a game plan together, and essentially they're going to be calling the same plays anyways. So, I don't know. That's just my opinion.
I get what you're saying, but I think he's very much an exception, too, because he's done nothing but do a really good job of doing this.
There's been times it's been
If you watched every Niners game, you can pick out plays that Kyle Shanahan makes bad play calls. You can say the same thing with Andy Reid in Kansas City, the same thing with Sean McVay in Los Angeles. It happens to every single play caller of every single football team at every single level. There's not a perfect play caller in the football world.
No, absolutely. And if I would have none of them doing it. Kyle Shanahan is awesome at it too, but I would not have him calling plays either, or Andy Reid, or any of them.
I mean, if you're consistent with those guys, I can't push back on that.
Thank you, Rob.
I disagree with it.
I'm gonna.
I think
three Super Bowls the Chiefs.
Right.
Like, yeah, but he's probably assuming it'd be more.
But at least if you're gonna be consistent, I can't be mad at you. If you say, you know, Kevin Stefanski shouldn't be calling plays in Cleveland, but neither should Andy Reid in Kansas City, I cannot pick apart that argument as much. I don't agree with it, but at least you're consistent.
What kind of dynamic does it make when you have an OC calling plays, right? So say Ken Dorsey's calling the plays, and once a game, once every time the big play happens, Kevin Stefanski goes, nah, Ken, I think we're going to do this one here.
Right.
What does that lead to? If every time we're going to break, and Anthony's going, hey, we're gonna wrap it up here, and I go, no, Anthony, let's do another minute, right? Like, what kind of inconsistency does that lead to as a sort of dissection between the offense and the staff?
Well, what kind of culture does that create on your staff? A poor one. Because let's say, for the sake of this argument, Owen, that Ken Dorsey would be the play caller and Kevin Stefanski trumps him when it matters most. You're not actually letting Ken Dorsey do his job then, because you hired him, and obviously this is in some alternate reality. You hired him to call plays, and you're not letting him do his job if you only let him call the plays that don't matter the most. And that, I think, creates a bad environment in the coaching staff that bleeds into the rest of the team.
No, I get that. I get that for sure. I do wonder, like, first thing on Ken Dorsey's side of things, how do you think he feels today? I mean, I imagine him coming here and them leaving the door open for him to potentially be the play caller. I mean, unless you believe he was just told very early on he had no shot. I just can't imagine that.
I don't.
Because it's his offense, right? Isn't he bringing...
Do we know that, or is he here to supplement Kevin Stefanski's offense?
So that's what I wonder. We have all been under the impression that he is bringing over his offense from Buffalo. Is that not the case? Have we been misled? Is that false information that's just been kind of simmering behind the scenes?
I would expect there to be some subtle changes to what the Browns have done offensively, maybe incorporating some things that were done in Buffalo with Ken Dorsey. But I think if they were bringing over his offense, he would be calling plays, and it would have been clear from day one that that was the case. If it were Ken Dorsey's offense, Ken Dorsey would be calling plays, but I don't think that it is.
So you think maybe that this is the wrinkle here in all this conversation? Like, maybe we have had the wrong conversations to begin with.
It sounds like
we have assumed, like, oh, we're going to bring this Josh Allen offense in because it's more of a Deshaun Watson offense from what he was doing in Houston, some of the stuff from his college days. I mean, Deshaun Watson was on that podcast a few days ago that we played the audio where he said this is merging of the offenses. This is a merging of what Stefanski likes to do and what he likes to do for maybe his college days.
I'm super excited. I think everyone is super excited. I think it's going to get a little bit of, you know, a Kevin Stefanski and that NFL style. And then you're going to get a little Dorsey and that college style. And I think it's going to be a good mix of skill set and the players that we have. Yeah, it's going to be very, very exciting. And I know that those guys want to be very explosive and want to score a lot of points and don't hold anything back, you know, until the game is officially over.
That was Deshaun Watson from FanSided and the Dogs Pod earlier this week. So, you know, we're hearing from the players about this a little bit. And I know when we come back, Amari Cooper weighed in on the new offense. A lot of moving parts here. And I think Danny raises an interesting question. Are we really getting a Ken Dorsey offense at all? 216-474-0092. I want to hear from fans how they feel about that question.
We're getting the super offense, remember? It's a mix of every good offense ever.
The beautiful hybrid of the top 10 offenses in NFL history. Amari Cooper talking about Ken Dorsey and the offense he is bringing over from Buffalo. We do have a lot of questions on what that's going to look like. What are some of these central tenets? Like, we know when you hire a new defensive coordinator, the defensive coordinators all say the same thing. We're going to be aggressive. We're going to hit hard. We're going to be fast. Offensively, I think you hear a lot of the same stuff from a lot of the coordinators, but what did you make? I'm joined by Danny Cunningham in on Ken's final day off before Monday. When you hear Amari Cooper talking about Ken Dorsey, did anything stand out to you that wasn't commonplace from what every new OC is trying to get accomplished?
I mean, not a ton. The fact that he did bring up that the offense is going to feature some of the things that he feels like he did in college when he was at Alabama, I think that was the biggest thing that stuck out to me in that clip, because a lot of offenses in the NFL, it's kind of been homogenized to where pretty much everyone not looks exactly the same, but has pretty similar concepts and does things in similar ways. So I am excited to see what they are going to bring over that looks similar to what it did last year and in previous years under Kevin Stefanski. But there are also going to be things that I do think are going to be different. And I think that there are going to be things that they can do to better utilize Deshaun Watson's athleticism. And that's the one area where I think, even though, and you and I have agreed on this, the processing speed for him hasn't been as fast as we would like it to be. The reading of defenses, I don't think, has been what it was when he was in Houston. the athleticism has still been there. He's still been really good when he's able to get outside of the initial structure and make plays. So I do think that there are ways they can do that. And Amari Cooper could be somebody that benefits from that too.
Well, and with the news yesterday that Ken Dorsey would not be calling the plays, that Kevin Stefanski would retain the play calling, it led to a bigger question about what is this offense that's coming in? Is it going to look that drastically different? Because some fans are clamoring for that because they want to get the most out of Deshaun Watson. Everybody wants to get the most out of Deshaun Watson. But what you don't want to lose is the stuff that you did really well with Kevin Stefanski, and especially when Joe Flacco came in, they did a ton of things really well that you may not have seen.
Right, they did. I mean, the play action stuff they did with Joe Flacco was the best play. And
so is that gone? Is that going to be gone?
No, I don't think so, because I do think that's been part of Kevin Stefanski's offense the entire time. I just don't know how well Deshaun Watson's operated that, because if you go back and look at what Baker Mayfield did really well, I thought he was terrific in play action in that 2020 season. He's really good in quick game. Thought he was really good in play action. The other areas are where he struggled.
And Stefanski scheme guys wide open.
Exactly. And I think he's done a great job of that in play action. Even, you know, some of Joe Flacco's big plays that he made last year, some of them were him taking some risks, which we saw flipped because he threw how many picks and pick sixes when he was in a Browns uniform. But how many of those were also he was able to take deep shots because dudes were just uncovered so far down the field? Like, Kevin Stefanski, I think, does a great job of scheming guys open all day long.
Because when that offense is done right, that is the case. Yeah. I think people have seen that over the years. 216-474-0092. A little bit later on this segment, we will get to maybe one huge question mark that was addressed yesterday at training camp. But when it comes to the offense, something I feel like not enough people are talking about. Here is Kevin Stefanski on the impact of Ken Dorsey on this new offense.
I feel real confident about Ken's ability to coordinate the offense, and so much goes into that, whether it's install, managing the staff. And then, as you know, Ken is the main voice in the quarterback room. Now, I'm in there every day and listening and adding when I feel appropriate. So there's a lot of really strong voices in there. But I do think Ken has a unique perspective. And I think I feel really confident in his ability to impact both the quarterback room, but more importantly, the offense.
Danny?
I think it is. I think the quarterback room is obviously the very important part of this. And Ken Dorsey having experience as a quarterback who was capable of being in the NFL but wasn't actually very good, I do think makes for a good quarterback coach. I think that there's a case to be made that Ken Dorsey might be a better quarterback coach than he is offensive coordinator. And coordinating the offense is one thing. Calling plays, I do think, is something else, because there is a ton that goes into every single week in the NFL, way more than just the guy who dials up the plays on Sunday. There's so much more that goes into putting
together a plan. Even though it's all we talk about.
It's all we talk about because it's what we see. We're not at practice every day. We're never in meetings. We don't see what actually goes on that leads up until Sunday, but there's a ton that goes on. So just because Ken Dorsey's not calling plays here doesn't mean that he's not very important to the Browns' success offensively.
Well, and generally, those guys that stick around the NFL as the backup quarterback, the Ken Dorseys, the Alex Van Pelts, those guys that do 10 years in the NFL as a backup quarterback, they're not there because of their athletic ability.
Right.
It's because the things they do and play breaking down and the ways they help the starting quarterback, who's probably, you know, the most dynamic player on the field during the game, but managing how they get through the week. And that's really what.
From the mind of a 2 foot tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition. You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
he's doing here now, right, is managing how they're able to go into the game and be knowledgeable of what the game plan is when Sunday comes around.
I view position coaches in the NFL that have played in the NFL a lot like I view NBA head coaches that played in the NBA. So the way I look at that, if you were like an all-time great NBA player or a Hall of Fame level NBA player, it's pretty rare that you're also going to be a really good coach. There are a few exceptions to that. But for the most part, if you were great as a basketball player, it's hard to be a great head coach too. If you were okay, if you had to do a lot to get by, a guy like Tyronn Lue comes to mind here, you can make, I think, a better coach because you know what everything that had to go in. But when you're someone like Steve Nash, who was an MVP in the league, it's easier to not be a good head coach because the game came a little bit easier to you. Like, I think LeBron would be a terrible head coach because of how good he is in the NBA. And there are obviously exceptions to every rule. Like, Jason Kidd was a Hall of Famer, and I think he's a pretty good head coach too. But even then, it took him three tries to figure out how to be a good head coach.
And this goes to show just how little we know about this part of the game, actual individual development. Like, if you were to ask the average Browns fan, or at least a Browns fan that's dialed in on social media, that, you know, we're all only privy to so much information. Like, if you were to ask who has the most influence over, like, mechanics and footwork to Deshaun Watson, who would most people say? I know who I'd say.
I would say
the guy not employed by the Browns.
Yeah.
I'd say Quincy Avery.
Probably, yeah.
Right? Because you see,
I wasn't even thinking about
who
that.
Who does he spend the most time with?
Yeah.
Who on social media, when you see him throwing the football around and working on his game, who do you see him with? It's Quincy Avery. Mm-hmm. It's somebody that he goes back a long way with. And I'm not even saying good or bad on that. I don't know much
no,
about...
No, it's just the truth.
Yeah, it's like Quincy Avery, we
That's
see...
That's a great point.
He's very active on social media, obviously, when he's not, you know, blocking people who rip on Deshaun Watson or Quincy Avery. Like, he's very active on social media. The Browns don't pay him, that I know of, unless there's a consulting fee or anything like that.
Well, if they pay him, they're not getting enough out of it. Like, if he's not actually on the staff, if he's not actually around, they're not getting enough out of it.
What if it's only, like, you know, $1,000 a week? It's a pretty good deal.
I look, I'm only bringing up that because it shows you how little we know. Like, I always wondered if you were getting a moment of honesty from any of these coaches around the NFL when it comes to their star players and who the people around them are. Like, how do they feel about their trainers? We know how Bill Belichick felt about Tom Brady and the people around him.
I think it's different at that specific position. Because there are guys that, you know, Nick Chubb works out with people in the offseason. Amari Cooper, mm-hmm. I'm sure, works out with people in the offseason.
100%.
But those guys, because of the position that they play, I don't think are as influential to what actually happens on the field. Where with the quarterback, because it's so much, you know, it is so mechanical at times and there's so much that goes into it. And maybe it's because we think about footwork with the quarterback position more.
Yeah.
But,
oh yeah,
you know, their offensive linemen go to offensive line specific coaches in the offseason, but we don't think about it that same way. And maybe it's because things have to be structured certain ways for certain teams and certain systems at certain other positions. But the quarterback position, I think you bring up a great point.
Well, here's what I mean. You're talking about Ken Dorsey maybe as being a really good quarterback coach. If Ken Dorsey came in after watching all the tape of Deshaun Watson and in the interview process, he sat down with Kevin Stefanski and said, I don't like the way his hips are opening up. I don't like the way he's throwing the football. I don't like the mechanics there. I don't like the windup. These are things. Here's the difference between what I saw to Deshaun Watson on film that I studied for this interview from last year, and here's how he looked in, you know, 2018. Mm-hmm. There's a difference here.
Big difference.
Okay, what happens next? Does Kevin Stefanski say, okay, let's get to work. Let's go back to the lab. Let's go look at the footwork. Let's break down the basics. Or do they go, hey, let's call his quarterback coach that he works with and he's with every day, that also is one of his best friends that he works with. Like, you could understand that could get kind of tenuous.
Yeah, and I think that's a big reason why a lot of, and certainly at the college level, a lot of programs do not like when quarterbacks specifically go work with outside coaches, because oftentimes coaches feel, actual football coaches, coaches that are employed by a program or an organization, feel as if those guys, those quarterback-specific coaches, can do more harm than good, because if nothing is broken, they feel like they have to change something to be worth it. And that's not always a good thing.
I don't know. Maybe we just put Dorsey and Quincy in a room. Shut the door and figure it out.
And
right?
I don't know anything. Maybe Quincy is the best. He's got some great clients.
Sure.
Maybe Quincy is the best of the best. But I wonder how the Browns feel about that.
I don't know. Because, I don't have that answer. That's a great question.
Because who's doing the coaching? Who's getting Deshaun Watson back to where he needs to get to? Is it a partnership? Boy, that's an interesting thing. Like the Browns are paying guys a lot of money to try to.
Well, you would think if it's a partnership, then one of those guys would be on the sideline during the game, and he's not.
Yeah, where is he?
California? I don't know.
I'm always
be
curious.
At the house.
I'm always a little surprised it doesn't come up more, by the way. Like it did with Tom Brady, and I know that it wasn't a quarterback guru. It wasn't somebody going Gutierrez, over his mechanics. Yeah. But it was Guerrero, right?
Oh, Guerrero, yeah.
It was his actual dietitian right. and trainer and all of that. And that became very contentious behind the scenes.
TB12 method, right? That's where that all came from.
But
right?
The thing is, with Tom Brady, it all worked. So that almost created different problems. Like how much access should they have? Well, it's working. Would I be prepared to, if all this stuff was working with Deshaun Watson, I'd be like, here.
But, I mean, franchises right. do certain things, especially with the quarter. You know, how many quarterbacks have had an office? Russell Wilson, and it obviously didn't work out in Denver, but when he first went there, Russell Wilson had a wing of, you know, Mile High Stadium
that's
that
right.
was his. And you know, when they made changes when Peyton came in, he said, we're not doing that anymore. But Brett Favre famously always had his own office. Manning had his own off, you know, their own style of things. And
Ken Carmen has his own parking spot.
Yeah. And you get, when you're the man, you get special privileges, just like Ken.
One of these days, I strive to get there.
You'll get there.
Another question that I feel like people are kind of glossing over when it comes to the Browns this year, and Albert Breer hit on this. You have a new offensive line coach. You're replacing one of the best to ever do it, and maybe the best in the game right now. Bill Callahan, of course, went to join his son in Tennessee. Listen to what Albert Breer said about Andy Dickerson taking over as the new offensive line coach.
I think almost as interesting as the coordinator change to me is the offensive line coach change. You know, Andy Dickerson is very well thought of, but Bill Callahan was the best in the sport. And so that part of it, I think, is going to be really interesting, seeing what happens with Andy Dickerson taking over for Bill Callahan.
Could I make the case, Danny, that is a bigger story for the Cleveland Browns going into training camp than anything we just spent the last hour and 35 on when it came to who's calling
absolutely.
The plays.
Absolutely, you can make that case. Because
why didn't we lead the show with that then?
Because it's not sexy. It's not.
Why was Dickerson not in front of the microphones yesterday answering the tough question?
That should have been the lead.
Because it's not sexy. But it is. I mean, this is an organization that offensively, they've done well. Because the offensive line has been good. Because they've been able to develop guys like Wyatt Teller. Someone like DeJuan Jones can step in last year and be awesome when he's healthy before he had to have knee surgery that ended his year. And Bill Callahan gets a lot of credit for that. And he should. So you don't know what it's going to look like when Bill Callahan's not here. And that actually, I think that is something that should be a bigger deal than the play calling to fans. Is what's the offensive line going to look like when they don't have the best offensive line coach? But in the same breath, you know, Wyatt Teller made those comments the other day about he's excited to play football again and how much of that has to do with having a new offensive line coach.
That one was an eye-opener to me.
It was.
And it wasn't that Wyatt Teller was saying anything negative about Callahan and his ability to coach.
No.
Like he, you could tell there was a push and pull there throughout that article with Tyler Dunn, his one-on-one, when he was like, you know, I didn't really love this. I didn't really love playing for him. But he also got a lot out of me.
Mm-hmm.
And he also helped me get to the next level and figure out how I could be the best I could be.
I don't think Wyatt Teller would be Wyatt Teller if not for Bill Callahan. I don't.
Well, and so the one we're all going to point to and the one that's going to be under the microscope this year is DeJuan Jones. I mean, that is somebody who you imagine when Bill Callahan had the chance to work with him and saw the physical traits, he was probably thinking, how is this guy not a first-round pick? This is a steal.
I mean, you watched him through the first few games he played, and you thought, how'd this guy last until the fourth round?
The TJ Watt videos.
Right. I mean, I watch that video every day. That's why TJ Watt didn't win Defensive Player of the Year, that play specifically.
Ken sends those videos to Filippone every single day.
I mean, somebody needs to. Somebody. That's why they're so mad in Pittsburgh, that video.
All right.
Couldn't handle a rookie tackle.
Sometimes you just need a fix.
FML, my life.
My life.
FML,
fix my life.
Denny, what do we do?
Fixing lives.
My life.
All right, so one member of this show, because Ken and I have talked about this a lot. It's always a tradition around March Madness. Whether or not you're going to get taken care of down below.
Snipped.
So that you never have kids again. Well, I'm actually going through the process. And I had my appointment yesterday, my consultation.
Wow. How was it?
Got naked in front of a complete stranger. And
sounds like a regular Thursday for you.
I hadn't done this in a while. I mean, I'm not using a gym right now where, you know, you walk around naked and it's just kind of the thing you do. For some people do. I don't know.
You're at a normal gym instead?
No, I'm not. Once the second kid came, I was told it was going to be harder to work out. I'm not Keith Britton.
Well, nobody's Keith Britton.
I don't somehow take 2 hours out of my busy day to then still find a way to work out. I don't know how his wife allows that. I am not allowed to do that. I am not permitted. I have responsibilities.
I'm sorry to hear that.
It sucks. I would love to. I'd love to join Keith. Still not doing 2 hours. I think it's a little.
Yeah, it's a little ridiculous.
But that's the last time that I'm really just walking around naked at any point in front of anybody.
So at the gym, you're just walking around naked?
No, I never did. There was coverage for most of that experience. Some guys do.
Would
some
you
guys
shower just, at your gym you
I
worked
did,
out on?
It all depended on the schedule. Like back in the day when I was in afternoons here, like I would go right after and work out a lot of days.
So like you would do updates until what, 6 o'clock?
Yeah.
And then you'd go work out after? Oh, that's miserable.
But yeah, I remember I was up late, so that was inconsequential. Like I wasn't eating dinner till later. Everything was shifted.
When I work out, I love going to the gym before work. I love going to the gym at, you know, 5:30, 6 in the morning, going before work, coming home, showering, and then working.
So you went to the gym yesterday?
No, urologist.
Oh.
And, you know, I wondered. I didn't know if I was going to have to do that yesterday, but it just kind of, we're making small talk. We're talking about, you know, where we live,
who
we know.
This was like a first appointment for this.
And well, because he asked who referred me, and then that took us down the rabbit hole of explaining who we know. And turns out he was playing coy. Like, he knew exactly who I was.
Right. Well, I wanted to ask you that.
Yeah. Like, listener?
I don't know if he didn't fess up to being a listener.
Was it Elton in East Cleveland?
That would have been awesome. Elton, if you saw me yesterday, full frontal, it was an enjoyable experience. So my question to everybody is, are you going small talk when you're doing that? Or are you just letting the awkward silence kind of persist?
I mean, that's some heavy silence. That's some real heavy silence. I think you do have to go small talk. Like, you have to make it as normal as you possibly can, which I'm sure you did. I do wonder, the other part of this that I think is interesting is, obviously, you are a public figure of sorts. You're well known throughout this community. This guy, I don't know if he listens or not, but he knew who you were. Does that make it more or even maybe less awkward for you, considering that this guy who's down there checking you out knows who you are?
So
like, it's
silence,
not as if you're just...
Yeah, I have to say, silence just to me is like the worst thing in life when it's in an awkward situation. Like, mm-hmm. I am somebody who has no problem striking up a conversation. I don't always want to. It all just depends on the situation. Like this situation yesterday, I mean, it wasn't just full exposure. It was also some probing. It was also...
There was contact made?
Also some maybe a little bit more caressing than I thought would happen.
Oh.
But that's part of the job.
Wow.
He has to make sure that everything is intact and everything is ready to go. So
now, did you do this before the small talk or after the small talk?
It was kind of during. It was kind of in the middle.
So what was
you
the
got
lead
ambushed?
Up
like?
I didn't know. I didn't know that this would happen at all. I didn't know that there would be exposure or caressing.
Well, what did you think they were? What did you think the consultation was going to be?
Well, they got to do a site survey before they start.
That is
the
what
building.
Happened.
You can't just go in blind.
That was due diligence. He had to make sure everything was intact.
Did he take notes?
There, you know what? No notes. Now, I wonder.
Just committed it to memory?
Would he have his help in there? He did not. It was just the two of us.
The two of you.
It was one-on-one.
Very intimate.
It was very intimate.
Did you feel like you needed a third party?
What, just for HR purposes?
Yeah.
Can't be too safe.
Hey, I've been an exhibitionist in the past, so but this was not the time or the
date.
Did
you need a guy in the corner in a launch?
Joe and Avon. Go ahead, Joe.
Good morning. How are you today?
Great to have you on.
He's great.
Good.
I chimed in late, so you went full frontal at the National Card Show, or am I missing signals here?
Was Manziel there? I thought Manziel was supposed to be there. They didn't do the show on location from my appointment.
Well, you qualified as an exhibitionist. I didn't know if it extended to yesterday.
I
would have loved to seen Baskett and Phelps in the corner, live from your urology appointment.
Look,
now that's a remote.
I've gotten to the point, I think I'm mature enough to have fun, like, mentally I can have fun in these situations. Like, sure. It's such a ridiculous scenario. It's like right out of a Curb Your Enthusiasm. Like,
it is.
Nobody enjoys this kind of thing, so you have to find enjoyment out of it.
Did you continue the small talk after this?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, by the time the clothes were back on.
You need to have him over.
You think we need to be friends?
I mean, if you're going to do all this in maybe the most intimate of setting that you can be in with another human being who you are not a romantic partner with.
But see, here's the thing, though. We have mutual friends. Like, that's how I was referred to this guy. So I think everybody in town is going to this guy and then having him over for dinner and golfing. Like, I think that's part of the deal.
Well, do you want him to keep a secret, or do you want him to let something out?
Oh, I don't.
Is this how you make friends in your 40s?
You know what? I wondered about that because we have not made a lot of friends.
It's tough to make friends when you're an adult.
Especially with two newborns.
Yeah.
You're in a new community.
We haven't had people over. We don't really do a whole lot right now. So.
Right now, it's the people on your street, and soon it'll be the people that your kids go to school with.
Yeah, that's when you'll start
and
making friends.
Your urologist, apparently.
I'm bracing for that. And our new urologist friend.
Now, did the conversation change when your pants dropped? Like, were you talking about one thing, or did it just keep on going?
No, it was a lot about property taxes, best golf courses in town. It was a lot of that. While I was naked. And his hands were.
I mean, no time like that, huh?
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.